This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. We'll be talking with paleontologist John Hawks in a moment. He's a contributor on the new PBS series, First Peoples. But first, the male pill is expected to be approved in the U.S. in a few years, and it's going to change a lot when it comes to sex. There are a couple pills being developed, including one that targets sperm's ability to swim. A recent survey said half of men said they would take the pill if available, and the male pill is going to make both men and women happy. Men will be excited because they will get to control if they have a child or not, while women will be happy because they won't have to remember to take their pill every day. Tom Hanks is in negotiations to portray Captain Chelsea Sully Sullenberger in Clint Eastwood's film version of Miracle on the Hudson. The story of Sullenberger made national headlines in January 2009. Sullenberger and his crew had just taken off from LaGuardia Airport when both engines were knocked out by a flock of Canada geese. The veteran pilot realized there was no time to return to LaGuardia or reach another airport, so he made the decision to attempt a water landing on the Hudson River. The plan worked, and all 155 people on board survived. He instantaneously achieved hero status. John Hawks is a paleontologist and a contributor to the new PBS series called First Peoples. Tell us about this program. This really goes back into our history and examines where we all started from, right?
That's right. It's got five parts, one for each of the major continent areas that humans have spread to. You know, our species started in Africa around 200,000 years ago, and just over 100,000 years they spread into Asia. It has its own really interesting history about how they colonized that part of the world and mixed with people that were already there. And then from there they spread to Europe, to Australia, and into the Americas. And each of those has an interesting story from both the archaeological point of view and nowadays from the genetic point of view.
Well, has the science now allowed us to really get a much better handle on how this all developed?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one aspect of that, obviously, is ancient DNA. You know, we're able now to take ancient bones that were buried 10,000, 30,000, even today up to hundreds of thousands of years ago, and extract gene sequences from them. And that lets us not only study how the genes themselves have changed, but also how those people are related to different groups of people living now. 5 years ago, the Neanderthal genome was first published, and we saw that, hey, most people in the world have some Neanderthal ancestors. Well, today we know more about what genes were involved in that and where they spread to, and we know that some ancient people, especially in Europe, had a lot more Neanderthal ancestors than we do now. So you've got that ability now to open the book and turn the pages through the past to see how things have changed. And today, in the past, we were sort of looking at the outside of the book and trying to figure out what was on the pages.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. That's a great analogy. And your work as a paleontologist, how has that changed since you started your career?
You know, it is so fascinating because on the one hand, the genetics has given us the opportunity to make use of tiny fragments of bones that we weren't able to make very much out of in the past. But also, we have some really important new discoveries of fossils. You know, we're looking at some of the earliest known examples of our species, Homo sapiens, in this series. We're also looking at new discoveries of ancient bones. Tonight's episode in the Americas begins with the Yucatan in Mexico, where divers in caves have found ancient skeletons that are now known to be some of the earliest ever found in the New World. That kind of discovery just was not happening 15, 20 years ago. We're pushing the boundaries of looking at where things are hidden in the landscape around us, and we're also able to get more out of those tiny pieces of bone than we were in the past.
Do you think that we've uncovered most of what will eventually be uncovered, or are we just scratching the surface, literally?
I've got to tell you, I'm working on a site which is not in this series in South Africa. It's called the Rising Star Site. And we have uncovered from that site more early hominin remains than have ever been found ever in one place. And it was lying on the floor of a cave and waiting for somebody to walk by. We are only beginning this process of exploration. And that's really the message of the last 10 years of study in archaeology, is that there are so many places that people just have not looked. This series takes you to Laos, where new discoveries of early modern humans are coming out of caves there. That's not an area where people have been, you know, archaeologists have been going into caves. I got to tell you, it's not a real safe area over the last 30 years to go into caves and look for stuff, because obviously the remains of our involvement in Vietnam are there. But as these places have opened up for exploration, we're finding things that we never guessed would be there.
We're talking with paleontologist and series contributor John Hawks about the new PBS series First Peoples. I'm curious, when you hear about a new discovery, are you tempted to just jump on a plane and fly there immediately? Is like, does that get your juices going?
I have, in fact, done it from time to time. I will say, you know, two years ago now, I got a call from one of my friends, and he said, you know, we've got some bones in a cave. I'd like you to come. And I went, and I'll never regret that. You know, there are a few things that can be as exciting as just uncovering this new thing that, you know, time and time again in the laboratory, I'm studying things and I realize, you know, nobody has ever seen this before. This is new. And this series has a lot of that. You know, the genetics, you're looking at new information, and every one of those, somebody sitting in a lab thought, shoot, I never guessed I would see this, and here it is. It is just revolutionizing our knowledge of the past to be able to put these different sources of evidence together.
You're giving me goosebumps, actually, and I'm not a paleontologist, but I can hear the enthusiasm in your voice and the beauty of discovery, like you said, when you're the first one to see something that's never been seen before. That must be amazing.
Yeah, and one of the things that was really cool about participating in this show is that the producers said, you know, we want to go to these new discoveries. We want to go to these places and show people. And I will say, you know, I went to Ethiopia with these guys. I was in southern Ethiopia with the crew and at a site that I would just dream of going to, you know, and there it was. And it's just, you know, there's some beautiful footage of things, but also they're taking you to some very special places. You know, I can't dive underwater in caves, but in this program, you can go underwater with the people and see what they're discovering. And it's what can I say? I think they've done a really nice job.
And why is this important that we know this, have this knowledge firsthand about the First Peoples series here?
When you look at people around the world, we share a lot with each other, you know. But there are a few things that tie us together so intimately as our history. And our history is one of mixing. You know, we all come from a small group of people that lived in Africa. 90 to 95% of our genetics trace back 200,000 years to this, you know, African population. But those people, as they expanded, as they spread, they diversified. You know, they start to become a little different from each other. They encounter new people, Neanderthals, for instance. They mix with them. They pick up some really interesting adaptive things that help them survive in new environments. And it's stuff in the immune system. It's stuff that's enabling them to survive new diseases. It's stuff that gives them a few new tricks to push the next boundary. And you've got this process of exploration, of settling new parts of the world, of, you know, raising families and succeeding there and having your descendants move on. You know, it's something that really ties us together. No matter where we live today, no matter where we come from, we're all a part of this network of history. So to be able to uncover that and to show people, hey, this is how these connections happened before history was written down, you know, that's really powerful.
Is there any one thing that is still out there that is a mystery to you and the other paleontologists that you'd like to uncover and explain?
You know, I'm going to give you such a great example, because 5 years ago, a discovery was made in a cave in the Altai Mountains of Siberia. It was a bone of a finger, just a finger bone. That finger bone had some of the best DNA preservation ever found in any ancient bone, and it produced a genome of an individual that we could not trace to any known population. This was something unknown to archaeology. We didn't guess that there would be a population there that's different from Neanderthals, different from anything we'd seen before. We call them the Denisovans. humans, and we can trace their descendants today. There's something like 5% of the ancestry of Australian peoples now, and a very small fraction, less than a percent, of people throughout Asia in the New World. So here's a branch of humanity that we had not discovered, that archaeologists had not guessed at, and here it is. It's got millions and millions of descendants now. There are other populations out there like that. I'm convinced of it. And we're going to find several of them in Africa. We're going to find them potentially other places in Asia. And those people will be a part of the story that we had not discovered yet. You know, that's what I'm waiting for. Every fossil bone gives us the chance of finding something new, something unexpected.
And are you affiliated with a college or university?
I'm at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Well, that's terrific.
Uh-huh.
Well, listen, John, I'd love talking to you. It's fascinating stuff, and we'll look for it on PBS, Exploring Mankind's Global Migration. The series is called First Peoples. We thank you for a couple of minutes and telling us the exciting story that we can watch on our local PBS station.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
With paleontologist John Hawks of First Peoples, I'm Mike Bennett, and you're listening to America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
What would you do with a $10,000 pay raise? Sure would be nice, wouldn't it? But is it realistic?
Yes, according to Larissa Hamm, writing for Daily Life. A raise like that isn't uncommon for job hoppers. But if you're happy where you are, you can still ask for a $10,000 raise.
Chances are you aren't currently being paid what you're worth. Find out if that's the case by checking a site like salary.com.
Then look for the right time. Ask for a meeting shortly after a big win. Yours, your boss's, or the company's. Before the meeting, practice, practice, practice until the words roll out naturally.
And remember, you're not issuing an ultimatum, you're putting forth a question. It leads to big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Think green.
Paris with you. A coalition of environmental groups have sued the federal government to force the Army U.S. Corps of Engineers to stop construction of an Everglades area golf course inhabited by the endangered wood stork. Back in the 1950s, as many as 6,000 pairs of wood storks nested in the Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary, the largest wood stork rookery in the United States. Today, there are fewer than 600 pairs of these gangly, grayish, considered unattractive birds. These storks depend on wetlands that are relatively shallow, that means below 18 inches of water, and those happen to be the wetlands that get permitted first for golf courses and such, thanks to big developer money. As many as 1,600 homes and a golf course are scheduled to be built here on a site near the Everglades habitat.
Think green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.